I got a problem. It's big, and only you can solve it.
Fine.
You know how I always call into the Dom Lippo radio show?
The sports guy?
Yeah, he talks about hockey, and I have very strong opinions about minor league professional hockey, as we all do.
Tell the story.
Right. Yesterday, I called in to say it's a bad trade, and we got in a fight, and Lippo banned me from his show.
You got banned for fighting about a sport where the best part is the fighting?
What do you want me to do about it?
I want you to call into the show and finish making my argument.
No.
But I did more research, and if I win the argument, he'll have to unban me.
Banned from most radio stations ourselves, this is The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
And while we're on hold for 45 minutes, I can teach you everything you need to know about hockey.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
You left a stain on every one of my good days, but I am stronger than you know. I have to let you go. No one's ever turned you over. No one's tried. Never let you down, beautiful girl. Bless your heart. I got a disease deep inside me, makes me feel uneasy, baby. I can't live without you. Tell me, what am I supposed to do about it? Keep your distance from me. Don't pay no attention to me. I got a disease.
Feels like you're. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus breeze radio show that strictly talks hockey. Not in the studio tonight. Jason and I are both nursing illnesses as we are away from the office in our own separate, hyperbaric chambers, trying to keep this from spreading.
Yeah, just pumping oxygen in to keep things going here.
That's right. So a couple of sick radio hosts. We're certainly gonna get a show out here for you. How are you doing otherwise, Jay? Everything okay? Yeah, everything going well?
I think at this point I'm much more on the mend than I thought I would be. Come Sunday morning when I woke up and was not feeling good.
Yeah.
But much better now.
I'm just trying to fight my way through it today. Today seems to be the worst day for me, so we'll see if we can get a bit of improvement overnight. But knock on wood, I've been medicating all day, so hopefully that goes a long way as well. Lots to go over today. Not a lot of topics, but a lot of details about what's gone on in hockey the last week. So let's get into this, because there's a lot to discuss. The first one is going to be pretty obvious. We got the details about the results of the investigation for Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau's deaths in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It's not good for the gentleman who hit them with his vehicle. And I want to say that there probably isn't any way for him to avoid a maximum penalty for this. And we'll get into why in a second, but it doesn't look good for 43-year-old Sean Higgins.
I can understand the outrage that people have at some of the things that have gone on, and you know what the we're obviously going to get to the details of what his maximum punishment could be, and I understand the outrage that people are feeling at that, but you know there is
law is the law,
and you know there is your pain is justified, but there are things to consider, when dealing with things like this.
Correct. Yeah. So let's get into the details then, because this is where the sort of the detail, the devil's in the details, so to speak. But 43-year-old Sean Higgins was held for 72 hours as per New Jersey laws. The investigation and initial charges were revealed last Thursday. We already knew that he was basically facing vehicular homicide charges for both Johnny and Matthew. Whether or not that's going to be upgraded, we'll have to see. But it looks like those are still in place. He is responsible for the death of the two brothers. Obviously, that's not going to be argued or not going to be in any way, shape, or form, denied, I would hope. But
and that is law at this point. Like the intoxication cannot be.
Well, we'll get to that because that's where things get real murky pretty quickly. Because the details that were revealed by some of the witnesses in the questioning and some of the people that I guess have a better sense of who this person is, really kind of did him no favors. And I'll say that nicely, but So according to the Associated Press, who released all of the information on Friday, Higgins is charged with two counts of death by auto or vehicular manslaughter, along with reckless driving, possession of an open container, and consuming alcohol in a motor vehicle. That was reported by Superior Court Judge Michael J. Silvanio, And basically that Higgins be held for trial despite defense arguments that he was a married father and law-abiding citizen before the crash. He will not be released. So he's not getting out. He's not gonna be, you know, able to go through life and wait for his trial with, you know, with family around him. He's gonna be stuck in jail until trial is set. So A, it sucks already for Higgins because, I mean, his own poor choices have led him to basically being incarcerated for the time being.
Yes.
Not great, not good at all. I feel bad for his wife and his two daughters, but
yes,
I also
that's who I feel the worst for in this, you know, at least in that part of the situation on his side of things. Like, I feel awful for his family that, see, and, you know, they're getting impacted by this.
But I feel awful for them for a different way, and we'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But so Judge, you know, Silviano obviously had to have a good reason to order that. It seems he was justified. Yes. Because, quote, Higgins told police that he had 5 or 6 beers that day and admitted to consuming alcohol while driving, while also failing a field sobriety test. Not good on any account at that point.
Yeah.
As like, per one of the prosecutors, quote, he had been drinking at home after finishing a work call at about 3 p.m., unquote, and it was found that Higgins had, quote, a blood alcohol level of 0.087 above the 0.08 legal limit in New Jersey, unquote. So,
which is crazy.
So dude's drunk. Like, dude's yes. getting into his car, and he's drunk. And regardless of what you want to think about that, there is zero tolerance for that in my books.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that people are going to go, well, you know, people do it all the time. No, zero tolerance in my books.
Just because people do it all the time doesn't make it right.
I mean, we've seen so much tragedy come out of drunk driving that this should be an automatic for people at this point in their lives to go, you know, that might not be the best idea.
It still boggles my mind that people are so quick to dismiss behavior like this. And I want to hope that their lives haven't been touched by a tragedy like this or that involves drunk driving in some way. But like, that's the only way that I can see that somebody would even be in the frame of mind to dismiss drunk driving as like not a big deal and you can do it because everybody does it. Like, I mean, it's a thing that your parents used to say, right? Like, if all of your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump with them? Like, no, just because everybody's doing something doesn't make it the correct thing to do. It's still stupid. It's still destructive.
Yeah, oh, I totally agree. I mean, I just can't get over the fact that this guy thinks it's okay to do this when he has two daughters and a wife at home that are relying on him. That's the part that makes me the most angry about this. Yes, yeah. I get it. I get the anger and I get the rage towards the deaths of the Goodrow brothers, and I totally understand that. But it makes me angry that he broke up a family that legitimately didn't need to be broken up.
Exactly.
Because of his stupid behavior. Yes. And again, I'm not trying to resolve them. There's some sort of issue there that's going on, and from the next statement you'll hear, it might be reflective of that. But at the end of the day, though, there's still a family without a husband and a family without a dad or without a father around now.
Yeah, well, it's not just the two families. It's three families that have been destroyed.
Correct. Yeah. So Higgins didn't get any help from his past behavior either, according to the reports filed by the Associated Press. Quote. His wife said he had been drinking regularly since working from home, unquote. And she told police that he had, quote, a history of driving like a nut, unquote.
So my initial assumption when I heard the story and heard the description of what occurred on the road was not very far off. That
based upon what he did, yes.
I agree. The entitlement that this guy seems to possess. If he is actively driving like a nut, even if he is sober.
So first,
the alcohol just adds to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's only gonna lower your inhibitions, right, in terms of what you can and can't do. But first assistant prosecutor Jonathan Flynn of Salem County also made it clear that, quote, Higgins had a history of road rage and reckless driving, stating that Higgins apparently became frustrated when the two drivers ahead of him slowed down to go around the cyclists and sped up to try and pass them on the right, striking the Goodrows, unquote. So this dude not only was driving on a two-lane road, so one coming towards, one going with traffic in terms of, you know, northbound, southbound, was driving on and saw them move over to the left to allow these two cyclists, and he thought, there's my opportunity to pass them.
Yeah.
Like, what? Who passes on the right?
Somebody who is an idiot and thinks that they're entitled to be wherever they're trying to go that much faster to the detriment of other people on the road. Like, it is such an arrogant attitude to possess. Like, that's the kind of thing that you see from, you know, idiots on the highway when you're, you know, driving out somewhere long weekend and they're just zipping through traffic because they need to get to, I don't know, like Matlock that much faster. They need to shave 5 minutes off, you know, their 2 hour commute. Like, it speaks to a whole attitude that this guy seems to have possessed for a good chunk of his life, that he's willing to do that and has a history of it.
But okay, I mean, this next statement is where I think this is where we have to draw the line and say enough's enough. Because according to Judge Silviano, he said, quote, he indicated he didn't even see them, unquote. He indicated he didn't even see two guys on bicycles.
So you're either so out of your mind drunk that you're not seeing straight, or you're just
completely distracted by what's going on. Yeah. Like, your road rage has you in such
a tunnel vision,
right, that you don't even see the two guys on bikes that are right ahead of you.
Yeah, like a person who is, one, not drunk, and two, not experiencing road rage, you know, for context, like, when you go into a state of rage, you know, that road rage, it does fall under that category. Your brain undergoes a process called downshifting, where your brain actively starts closing off different processes. And, you know, when people say that, you know, they get so mad they can't think straight, that's what that is that your mind becomes singularly focused on the thing that's making you mad, because that's just a biological response, that you don't have the ability in the presence of mind to take a step back and think, what I'm doing is stupid.
Well, but again,
with this, the guy has obviously, through his repetitive behavior, trained himself to get into this state, or prepped himself to get into this state regularly, and then he just made it worse by being drunk.
Okay, so here's where I think that again, defense lawyers didn't do him any favors either, because defense lawyer Matthew Portella told the hearing, quote, he's an empathetic individual, and he's a loving father of two daughters. He's a good person, and he made a horrible decision that night. Exactly. He made a decision. This wasn't some accident. Mm-hmm. This wasn't some, you know, random occurrence. He made the decision to get behind the wheel after having 5 or 6 beers that day and having a blood alcohol level of 0.087. He made that decision.
Nobody held a gun to his head and said, you're going to down these six beers, get in your car, and drive like a moron.
And I don't care if people are going to be like, oh, you shouldn't be in prison for 20 years. It was just an accident. No, he should be in prison for 20 years. That is a decision that he made. It's no different than, and I hate to say this because I know that it's not the intention, but it's no different than, you know, pointing a gun at somebody and pulling the trigger and I shot you. Didn't mean to do that, but, you know, it happened, sort of thing. No.
You actively take on that risk by pointing a gun, loaded gun at somebody.
Your road rage, your alcoholism, and now your driving, your inability to drive properly, have caused 2 major deaths.
Mm-hmm. Like, an accident is when you hit a patch of black ice and you accidentally rear end somebody. This is not an accident. This is a collision. This is causing death. You know, this isn't a mistake. This is not an accident. Like, to say it's an accident is passive in diminishing the harm that was done.
But Judge Silviano said that Higgins admitted that his impatience caused two deaths. His impatience.
Exactly.
Which means that, again, he made a decision to pass on the right. Yeah, that was a decision he made.
Yeah, and he's acknowledging the fact that he made that decision. He's acknowledging that he put himself in that position. It's on him.
To me, this is legitimately a classic case of just come out and say that you're taking the maximum penalty and serve your time without complaining. Like,
yes.
I can't be more unsympathetic towards this guy. I feel bad for his family. I feel bad for the Goodrows. Obviously, they're going to mourn some losses in terms of what goes on here. I feel nothing but anger towards this guy because he chose this outcome.
Yes.
I mean, nobody chooses it. Nobody chooses the outcome.
Person.
Well, I'll just say, I mean, I'll asterisk that by saying nobody chooses the outcome of trying to kill somebody, obviously, but the outcome legitimately was determined by his previous actions, and that's exactly what we're looking at now. I have zero tolerance for people who want to drive it while intoxicated. Zero. Mm-hmm. Because all you're doing is putting other people at risk as well. When they have when they have no reason even being involved in your own intoxication.
Exactly. Like, it is he is the one person in this situation that deserves no sympathy. You know, everybody else involved is being brought into this situation against their will. Like, this is not, like, we're not even talking, mentioning the witnesses.
No,
the other people on the road who saw this, the first responders who now have to live with the knowledge that they attended to this scene and the things that they've seen at scenes like this. This guy actively chose to drink and get behind the wheel, and knowing his history, decided to engage in this behavior.
So again,
his inebriation is not an excuse.
No,
for him acting like a moron. You know, it's play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Your stupid prize is you're going to be behind bars for 20 years.
But again, I look at this and I think to myself, you know how and again, I'll throw this out there because it happens to some people. I'm sure it happens to many people when they have kids or get married. Like, people's priorities in life change, obviously.
Yes.
Now, this guy's an Iraq vet. Like, he certainly did some time in terms of, serving in the military, and he works as a in finance for an addiction treatment company, which blows my mind that he's still getting drunk during the day in terms of working for an addiction treatment company, but whatever. But I look at this and I go, if you really cared about your family, if you really wanted to prove to your wife and to your daughters that you were in it to win it with them, would you not try and seek treatment for this? Would you not try and seek treatment for day drinking while you're working? Like, that,
yes,
that is in unto itself, that is an addiction.
Like, that's the thing that I was thinking about when you met, because that's the one wrinkle in this that I didn't know about, was the fact that he had begun actively day drinking since he began working from home. Like, that's a situation where you should take active steps. If you realize that's a problem and people in your life are mentioning that it's a problem, you need to take active steps to remove that problem from your life. Stop having alcohol in the house. It's a very clear answer for what can help in that situation.
Well,
if you have a problem with day drinking, then don't have alcohol in easy access.
Not even that, but have some sort of supervision there then. Because obviously you can't be trusted to do this on your own. So somebody should have been supervising you, whether you went back to work, prevented you from working from home, or whether you had to have somebody, check in every hour with you, make a phone call and go, hey, how's everything going? Are you, what's going on? Hey, I'm going to stop by in the next hour, see how everything's going as well. Mm-hmm. You are legitimately a child at this point because you cannot take care of yourself. You're not an adult. You're making bad decisions with terrible consequences.
Yes. Like, and I think, going back to stuff about being an Iraq vet and the work that he's done in kind of the addiction treatment area, this is a situation where we need to remember that good people can do bad things and bad people can do good things.
Right.
This does not, just because of who you are 90% of your life, does not discount or, you know, taint the other 10%.
And I also want to,
if you're a great person for your entire life and you do something horrible on one day, those other, you know, that other 99% of your life should not absolve you from this one bad day.
So right. The thing that bothers me about this, and again, I'm not trying to blame anybody for this in terms of what's going on, but it's one of those things that I think that I don't think a lot of people think about either. Again, he served in combat in Iraq. He certainly was, you know, I can't say he's on the front line. I don't know where he was serving combat or what he was doing there, but it's known. It is a known fact that veterans who have experienced combat trauma have higher rates of heavy drinking after returning home compared to before their deployment. PTSD also factors in on that. Can lead to heavier and more frequent alcohol use by people trying to forget those memories in terms of what's going on, right? Again, I'm not trying to blame this on mental health. But what I'm saying is that this might be the catalyst that this guy has a mental health issue.
Yes.
And he needs treatment badly. And unfortunately, the only way he's going to get it now is by spending the next 20 years in prison.
Yes. And hopefully there are those resources available to him behind bars, because eventually one day he will be released and you don't want this behavior to repeat itself.
Well,
there to be change. You want there to be growth.
I'm almost certain that he won't be able to, like, getting a license now will be out of the question. He won't be able to drive anymore. I mean, that's going to be obvious in terms of one of the conditions of his release at some point. But secondly, he's 43. He'll be 63 when he's released, or maybe younger, depending on how parole goes on, you know, good behavior, all that kind of stuff. Again, let's just throw a round number out there. He'll be 55 when he gets released.
Yeah.
What can he do at that point? Nobody will hire him. He's been in prison for the last, you know, 12 years. He's got very little skill in terms of everything that's coming out now. I mean, he can still work in finance, I guess, but do you really trust a guy that just committed double vehicular homicide to work in finance?
And that criminal record's going to, you know, put a lot of roadblocks
right in front of him. And three, the alcoholism is going to also put up another pile of roadblocks. Mm-hmm. This isn't going away anytime soon. Like, he is going to be legitimately in deeper hot water than what he was ever in prior to this.
Yeah.
And all it would have taken was for a handful of people, and again, I'm not trying to blame anybody here, but all it would have taken was a handful of people to go, hey, man, you need help.
Yes. And this is one of those situations where, you know, it is, you know, no matter which way you look at it and no matter how you slice the situation, it's awful. Like, it's going to be difficult. Like, you know, nobody wins in a situation like this. Life is going to be difficult for him regardless of what happens here. And it's just one of those situations where nobody wins. Like,
no.
It's just going to be a bad situation all around, and it was entirely preventable. And that's going to be the worst thing, is that people, you know, there's going to be people who are sitting there thinking, oh, maybe I should have said something.
Well, I mean, you kind of hope that, again, 20 years or however long he spends in prison will refocus his what is important, his priorities, you know, whether it be family, whether it be, you know, what comes next, a little bit better. But I don't, there is no way he's getting out. He's getting away with any of this. There's no way he will be found not guilty for what happened. There is no way he will be found not guilty with a lesser sentence for any of this, or guilty with a lesser sentence. He made a series of bad choices all day, which unfortunately resulted in the worst of consequences.
Yes. And obviously, you know, he's entitled to his defense, and his defense team is going to do what they can to have the best outcome there. But ultimately, you know, they are, you know, the justice is going to go about its process, and regardless of how long he spends behind bars, like, this is just an awful situation. I don't see, with the fact that, you know, he failed the field sobriety test, he admitted to a bunch of stuff at the time, like, there really is no scenario where he walks away with anything, really. there is no walking away from the situation for him. It's more just like, how long?
Well, I think that to be away for. I think that's the question, right? Like, based upon his statements, based upon his past, I think the how long is going to be, you know, like how many, what number in double digits are we looking at here?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens coming up, because again, trial has to be set still, and I mean, he's going to be held for a while yet. But I mean, dude's life is essentially over already. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, took the lives of two young men who had a, you know, a bright future for sure, but. Johnny and Matthew aren't going to be forgotten either. Columbus Blue Jackets have announced that they're going to be honoring both players throughout the season coming up this year. Really nice sort of setup in terms of what they're going to do. Starting in their preseason game on September 25th, there'll be a moment of silence held for the two brothers, and the proceeds from the Blue Jackets Foundation 50-50 raffle will go to the John and Matthew Goodrow Foundation. Nice. So nice sort of touch there from Columbus in the preseason game. In their very first game that they play, their very first home game they play, will be October 10th against the Minnesota Wild. Columbus players will feature a patch with Johnny's number 13 on it. They'll wear on their jerseys. And throughout the season, during each game this season, Blue Jackets players will wear stickers featuring the word Goodrow on their helmets with two doves between numbers 13 and 21, which were Johnny and Matthew's numbers. So fantastic work there. Mm-hmm. Columbus doing a great job in terms of honoring these two men. All fans in attendance at the club's home game on October 15th will receive a 13 patch, like the one the players will be wearing on their jerseys on October 10th. So I'm gonna say this right now. I'm pretty certain that game's going to be sold out.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Columbus, on getting that sellout, because that's a big night for a lot of people, and certainly a lot of people are going to want to share in that. But really nice sort of setup to see Columbus doing a lot of good work to remember, you know, a couple of kids that, yeah, they may not have had a long sort of, you know, storied history in Columbus, but they certainly made their impact there.
Yeah. And for those wondering, the Flames and Blue Jackets essentially play a back-to-back, a home-and-home series. The Flames are in Columbus on November 29th for an afternoon game. And then they're in Pittsburgh the next night, but then they're back in Calgary to play Columbus on December 3rd. So there's probably going to be something. I'm assuming there's going to be something from the Flames specifically on that day.
Oh, for sure.
If not, both teams doing something together.
Former Flame Sean Monahan, former Winnipeg Jet, former Calgary Flame Sean Monahan, who signed in Columbus this summer because he wanted to play with Johnny Goodrow again. They were teammates and best friends during their 8 seasons together in Calgary. He said, quote, "I'll miss him the rest of my life." I mean, which you don't really sort of, you know, take anything away from other than that's pure emotion right there. Yeah. But they're going to keep Columbus has already said they're going to hang his jersey in a locker every game this season as well. They're going to keep a locker open and hang the number 13 Johnny Gaudreau jersey in that locker for every single home game, which is kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So super awesome to see what they're doing. Lots of guys, lots of players have come out obviously and said, you know, their piece in terms of how much he meant. You know, Tkachuk was speaking a little bit about it earlier in terms of everything that went on. Matthew Tkachuk, Sean Monahan, I mean, Zach Werenski's been saying a few things about it as well. It's tough to know that, you know, a team like Columbus that needed sort of a couple good breaks just got another, you know, another kick in the butt because of this whole tragedy. So hopefully there'll be some brighter days ahead for the Blue Jackets. But obviously, you know, the loss is still going to sting, and we want everybody to try and get through that. So
it's going to be if you just think about the impact that Johnny and Matthew had as people. The impacts of this radiate throughout the hockey community. And this is going to be a hole that exists for a very long time. And it's going to stick with both the Flames and Blue Jackets organizations for probably their entire history.
Yeah, the history of the entire... I mean, you look at Columbus, and I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to make light of Columbus as well. But you look at Columbus, and I mean, they lost...
Kiv Lennox
as well. to another ridiculous, and again, I'm not trying to downplay, but to another ridiculous accident.
Yeah,
that probably shouldn't have happened either.
Yes, now that is what you classify as an accident, right?
Right. Like that is a true accident.
A firework fell over and fired at somebody, and he threw himself in front of it to save somebody.
Like that. I mean, again, that's a hero as well. So,
yeah,
good on him. Good on.
It's an organization that has had so many bumps along the way the last few years that they just need a win at some point. You know, they need to catch a break.
Well, you hope that they'll find one soon, because I mean, they got some good young players there. I want to see them do well. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a struggle this year with a lot with the, you know, sort of the dark cloud hanging over that arena, nationwide arena there. But at the same time, though, you kind of want to see them, you know, maybe pick up Johnny's, you know, love of hockey, Johnny Hockey's love of the game there, and run with it a little bit. So, but we'll have to see what happens with Columbus. So yeah, so we'll see what happens with Sean Higgins. Obviously, again, he's looking at a long time in prison for what happened. Obviously, you know, our best to the Goodrows again for everything they're going through, and to all their friends, family, and teammates. That's a tough setup, and we hope the best for them. We change gears though, and we go to the business side of the game now.
The lovely business side of hockey.
I'm going to say that this is the death of one institution in order to keep another institution afloat.
Yes.
So you may not have heard, or you may have heard on Wednesday, that Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment got a new investment opportunity as Rogers Communications has decided to buy out Bell's ownership share of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment for a cool $4.7 billion, resulting in Rogers owning 75% ownership in the sports conglomerate. So Rogers and Bell currently hold equal shares at 37.5%. Tannenbaum, I believe, owns 20% still, in terms of his setup.
He's been selling off his share, yes, over time. He has his own company now that owns the WNBA franchise.
Correct. Yeah.
And Coca-Cola Coliseum, and probably at some point is going to own the Toronto PWHL team.
So we'll see how much further Tannenbaum takes us. But again, he still owns 20%, excuse me. Omer's Canadian Pension Fund purchased a 5% indirect stake in Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment in the summer of 2023. So they own 5%. So there's your ownership of the Maple Leafs. It's basically a corporate conglomerate that owns it now. If you don't like your Rogers bill, I don't think you're going to like a lot of stuff that Rogers is going to do in the future with Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. But hey, I'm just calling it as I see it. Rogers president and CEO Tony Staffieri said in a statement, quote, "Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment is one of the most prestigious sports and entertainment organizations in the world, and we're proud to expand our ownership of these coveted sports teams as Canada's leading communication and entertainment company. Live sports and entertainment are a critical part of our core business strategy." And that's where I want to hit the full stop. Because if live sports and entertainment are a critical part of your core business strategy, your $4.7 billion investment in Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment probably could have been better suited for $4.7 billion worth of national TV rights that we no longer will get next year.
Yes. Yes. I think they did the math based on how this current, now soon to be former, deal went for them. And they're looking at it as a pure dollars and cents thing, where they see more value coming from the individual, not individual franchises, because of the 9 teams that are under the MLSE umbrella, because it is 9 teams. People incorrectly say that it's only 5, but it's 9. Only the Maple Leafs and Raptors make money reliably. So I think that's, they've done the calculus and said we can get a better return on these two things than we can on running this whole media thing.
Well, the ACC is the big sort of one of the big sort of attractions there as well, much like, yeah, you know, MTS Center here. It hosts all the events in Toronto, basically. So
yeah,
you kind of go, and all right, they need to buy in, basically. But
yeah,
75% of Rogers makes it so much more, mm-hmm, I hate to say this, so much more conglomerate, so much more company-issued mandates now rather than an actual sports ownership.
How very Canadian. One company owning so much of a giant property is it basically becomes a monopoly. That's weird. Because like if you look at the total portfolio of what MLSE has, they have Scotiabank Arena, they have BMO Field, they have Maple Leaf Square. I think they own Real Sports, the apparel company.
I think so,
they,
yeah,
they have Coca-Cola Coliseum for now. And then they have like a bunch of other like smaller stuff. And then
Let's not forget that Rogers also owns the Blue Jays and Rogers Center as well.
Yeah.
So they basically own all of Toronto sports now. Like every single team that plays in Toronto that's a professional team is owned by Rogers, or at least mostly owned by Rogers. The proposed sale, which again was expected to be closed sometime in mid-2025, puts the value of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, that conglomerate as we were talking about, in its entirety at $12.53 billion. That is a ridiculous amount of money for any company to be in charge of, let alone a company that can barely, you know, balance its own books. But the end of the day is that who else has that kind of money in this country? I mean, they have such a monopoly on everything. They're basically expanding into other monopolies now.
Yeah, well, it's like the way that I see it is maybe I'm thinking too much, like how these big corporations are probably thinking. Like, I'm looking at this and saying, okay, they're going to start really refining, you know, what their portfolio looks like, because I think they're going to start shifting things, right? Like they own the Maple Leafs, the Raptors, Toronto FC, the Argonauts, the Marlies, Raptors 905, the feeder team for Toronto FC, and the two esports clubs that are tied to the Raptors and Toronto FC.
Yeah.
I have a strange feeling that, you know, the Argos are probably going to go off. The Argos and Marlies are probably going to go off to Larry Tannenbaum's venture. Maybe MLSE will hold on to the Marlies just for the connection to the Maple Leafs, and Raptors 905 for the connection to the Raptors. But I feel like the Argos are going to be sold off to somebody. TFC is going to be sold off to somebody. And they're going to kind of shrink down to what dependably makes them money and what is dependably growing in value. And because, like, it makes sense from a Bell perspective why they want to get out, right? Like, they want to cash out on the investment that they made. Bell's been struggling.
Right. They said they're going to use
financially for a while.
They said they're going to use proceeds of the sale towards reducing debt levels and to support its ongoing transformation from telco to techco. Yes. They focus on core growth drivers, which to me sounds like we don't really have an idea of what we're actually doing. We're just trying to make sure that we're financially available so that you can still buy Bell, yeah, for example.
Like, they basically, from when they acquired MTS onward, you know, like, that was the big thing, is like Bell was number one, Rogers was number two, and then there was like Shaw and Telus and a couple other companies underneath them. And they were kind of the kings of the telecom space until they started slipping. And now Rogers has pulled even with them, especially with the acquisition of Shaw, which Bell was super against. And we all should have been more against as Canadian consumers. But you're right. Like, there's nobody really in Canada, this country that is really just five companies in a trench coat, at this point. Like, there's nobody in the country that can throw around the kind of money that the Rogers family now can, I think the only people that can really go toe to toe with them are the Thompson family, and they already own the Jets. So,
well, yeah, like, I mean, and I don't think that he's very much into the idea of owning sports ownership as much as he is real estate ownership. So,
yeah, Thompson only invested in the Jets as a way to get in with the city of Winnipeg.
Yeah, get the arena and then expand further. But so here's the thing, though: $5.2 billion, 12-year NHL deal with obviously TV rights in terms of what's coming up. $5.2 billion, which Rogers has been very clear they're losing money on.
Yes.
Okay. In May, Staffieri said he expects Rogers to, quote, be at the table, unquote, when it comes to the next negotiations. If Bell isn't going to be at the table, and if TELUS, which doesn't have a national presence whatsoever, isn't at the table, and who else is there other than the streaming companies then to go in on this deal with? Because as it stands right now, Hockey Night in Canada probably won't exist anymore.
Probably not. It is.
It will still be on Saturday nights. It will still be on Sportsnet. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but we're not going to see four or five games, you know, being broadcast on a Saturday anymore. It'll be one or two games again. It'll go back to the 1970s, 1980s way of we'll put on one early and one late game, and that's it.
Yeah, like unless the federal government ponies up some money to buy back Hockey Night in Canada for that CBC,
won't happen. Yeah,
but like. If I can stand on my soapbox for a second, like this is an issue of essentially Canada's own making, right?
Well, yeah.
Like we allowed for this crazy, crazy overinvestment in so much of the media landscape and, you know, just passively allowed two companies to gain more and more and more and more market share under the auspices of, well, if one of them becomes a monopoly, then we'll do something. It doesn't really help when two companies own 90% of the market. That's still 90% of the market that has no choice. And we're reaping the consequences of that. And it's going to be felt in that Canadian consumers are going to lose out because no action has been taken to stop any of this, right? Like if something had been done to make sure that there was competition, that people had the other companies were able to stand up.
But there was competition in the telecom industry when Fido and all those low, you know, Koodo and all those low cost carriers came out and said, hey, we're going to start up our own stuff. And what did Rogers and Bell do? They went and bought them all up.
Yes.
And now there's no bandwidth for other companies such as, you know, Mint Mobile or T-Mobile or AT&T to come into Canada, A, because they're American, and B,
yes,
because they don't have Canadian ownership, even though Ryan Reynolds is Canadian.
Yes. And the fact that if they come to Canada, they're still going to be customers of Bell and Rogers unless they want to spend billions of dollars laying lines for their telecom services, which they're not. Like no company homegrown, you know, grassroots competitor to Bell and Rogers is going to be able to afford to do that. No American or European company is going to spend the obscene amount of money required to wire up all of Canada to become a national carrier, and the two big guys aren't going to allow for that competition. They'll just buy out whoever anyways.
Well, again, Rogers already bought out Shaw, so there's nobody else out west that can compete with them other than TELUS, and TELUS isn't making that, you know, huge push to try. They're working on trying to be a national telecom company. They're not trying to be a national entertainment company.
Yes.
Whereas
they're
Bell,
focused on that part of their business.
Bell, who is publicly traded, has to legitimately ensure that its shareholders are getting what it needs, what they need. Mm-hmm. And then again, you've got Rogers, who again, also publicly traded, but also still heavily privately owned. And you go, if Rogers is just going to be able to buy everything up, what's the point now? Because there's not a lot. I mean, how many arenas does Rogers have their name on in this country? They own naming rights in Vancouver, in Edmonton, or I guess not, is it Edmonton, I guess? It's Edmonton.
Yeah.
They own in Toronto. They own, like, they're all over the place.
Let's go down the list. Rogers Place in Edmonton. Rogers Arena in Vancouver, which you mentioned. Let's see. Hey, Save on Foods has an arena. That's interesting. I just keep seeing TD, Bell, and Rogers as I'm going down this list here.
Well, and Scotiabank's getting into that now as well with the new Calgary one. Yeah.
But they own Scotiabank Arena is owned by MLSC, which is owned by Rogers, which has Scotiabank's naming rights on it. But they own the naming rights to two of the biggest arenas in the country. And they straight out owned the... So out of the top six, they own the naming rights for the second... I guess, what's this sorted by? As is sorted by maximum capacity. So they have the second largest indoor sports arena in Canada in Rogers Place, and they own the naming rights in the sixth, which is Rogers Arena. They own the fifth largest in terms of capacity in terms of Scotiabank Arena. Bell has the naming rights to the biggest, which is the Bell Centre. Videotron owns the naming rights for the Videotron Centre in Quebec City, which is the fourth biggest in the country. And the only one remaining is the Canadian Tire Centre in Ottawa, which is going to be replaced.
Well, that's just madness. That's madness. Like, Toronto, I get that the Toronto-based Rogers company can do whatever it wants, but my God, like, at some point somebody's got to go, you know what? We appreciate the offer, but we'll go with somebody else.
Yes. Like, it's more like, it is crazy. The, like, where do they get the money for all of this stuff? So, and then you realize, oh, they basically own the telecommunication industry in Canada. Great.
Right. And that's the part that's actually scary, because when you look at their channel lineup, like, they're making so much money off selling commercials.
Yes.
And you just go, they don't even need to have a telecom. I mean, that it's nice, you know, it's nice that they do, I guess, but they don't even need that. Like, they don't even care about their customers 90% of the time. And I mean, I'm not trying to try to be negative towards Rogers. I'm sure Rogers, if they're listening right now, they're like, we're never going to sponsor that show. They're a bunch of jerks. But end of the day is, I don't want to be owned by Rogers either.
No. I mean, I was not a Rogers customer until I was. Because they bought Shaw.
Right.
And
that's what happened to me. I got pushed to Telus that way.
Yeah. And like we've already seen like the
That was Bell. Bell and MTS. That was Bell and MTS that pushed me to Telus. Sorry for my cell phone. Yeah.
So what we had was a very massive, like, this is maybe blowing this out of proportion a little bit, but remember the outages in 2021 and 2022 from Rogers?
Yeah.
Where, like, emergency services and, like, all of banking or a huge chunk of the banking industry was down for an entire day because of a software update that went wrong at Rogers? Like, that's what we're talking about, where it's like, there are negatives to one company owning so much stuff. And having so much power, like we're gonna see, and it, on the to bring it back to the hockey perspective, like, sure, the Maple Leafs and Raptors are probably gonna be unaffected by this. Largely, Raptors 905 and the Marlies are probably gonna be unaffected by this. But do you think TFC and the Argos are gonna go unscathed when profit-minded executives over at Rogers aren't seeing the returns that they want, and they want to start optimizing and making more profit for their investment? Do you think that, you know, people's jobs aren't going to be on the line because of this? Like, do you think this is going to bode well for the NHL and what the media rights deal is going to look like when they literally have one option to go to?
But this is where I wonder how hockey is going to look on television next year for Canadians, because you don't have any other options, NHL. You're literally sitting with one partner. Now, again, you can go to streaming options. You can try and get streaming and everything going. But we already know that there's a lot of, you know, and I hate to say this, but a lot of old-fashioned people that like to watch hockey on TV, obviously. Bars everywhere, you know, all the bars and all the – they all love that as well, in terms of being able to get, you know, the games in there for having people to come in. having hockey on TV is something that is legitimately an institution in Canada. And now the option is either you take our offer, NHL, because we're the only ones at the table, or you're not on TV in Canada. And for the NHL to look at that and go, we'll choose not on TV in Canada and go streaming because, they'll pay us the same amount that you're willing to pay us.
Yeah.
And it ruins that entire – and, again, I know that people are going to – again, whatever you think about Ron McLean and all the guys on Hockey Night in Canada, all the analysts on Hockey Night in Canada, is your own opinion.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, though, those are the opinions that people talk about around the water cooler at work. Those are the moments that people talk about, you know, hey, did you see the game last night here in Canada?
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's enough of a human aspect to Rogers to understand that.
No, there definitely isn't with the cuts that they've made and the decisions that they've made for basically the entire time that they've owned the national rights, like, because it goes beyond just games broadcast, right? It goes down to the media, right? The reporters that are on the ground, it goes to the people that are on the radio or doing podcasts, even the web content that comes out, right? It's all run through one company. Like TSN is Bell. Sportsnet is Rogers. Whether you're watching Sportsnet content on your phone, on your TV, on the internet, whether it's, you know, Elliot Friedman tweeting something out, whether it's, you know, back when Nick Kyprios was a part of Rogers, his stuff, Jeff Merrick when he was part of Rogers, like all of those people are employed by the same company.
Right.
And it's under the same umbrella. So where it impacts one part of the business and one part of how hockey is consumed in Canada and brought to you in Canada, it's going to have ripple effects for everything else. Because as soon as they stop making money, they're going to start making cuts. And that's where you have a situation like what happened with the Bell layoffs not that long ago.
Correct, yeah.
Where you had really talented media professionals and sports professionals losing their jobs because the company wasn't making enough money. So it's easy for people to sit there and be like, oh, well, you know, I'll just watch it on this, or, you know, I don't care what the big telecoms do. It's like, yes, you do. You don't know that it's impacting you, but it is.
People have less of an appreciation, I think, of that than maybe what they should. And
yes,
it bothers me to an extent that these guys are legitimately the ones that are pulling the strings for everything that you see on Canadian television and especially Canadian sports broadcasts. So I would like some other voices every once in a while to join in there and be not so much dissenting towards the corporate aspects, but certainly reminding everybody that, hey, by the way.
Yeah. But it's also about like the opportunities, right? Like when we have situations like this, where it's this consolidation and this cut down in terms of the options and cut down in the access, right? Like I still remember back, you know, when I was a kid and I had the score on TV because they had the ticker and all that stuff. And, you know, I would see the highlights of, you know, the dressing room interviews after games, and there would be so many reporters there, you know, from newspapers and like the burgeoning online outfits and for TV and radio. And, you know, they'd have all the different logos and all the different outlets there. And there were so many people, and it's been wicked back and back and back and back. And I just think about the opportunities for people that are trying to like get their foot in the industry and how that's being cut back so much.
Well, you look at all the guys that ended up at Sportsnet that came from the score because they bought them, right? And I mean, you kind of go like the Tim McAuliffe's and the you know the Elliot Friedman's, and I mean even some of the people who didn't go into the hockey side of stuff, you go, they picked up a ton of talent because they were doing things way differently than everybody else.
Yep.
And as much as I appreciate the fact that they were doing that, at some point you had to know they couldn't compete with the big guys forever. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. And this is essentially what's happening now with, you know, with Rogers looking at what's the next thing I'm going to buy? What's the next team I'm going to buy? What's the next, you know, the next property I'm going to buy? Yeah. And I wish, like you said, I kind of wish that there was a requirement for them to only be able to own a portion and not a full share of, like, again, I don't care if they own 75%, they're making all the decisions in one team, but to make it on for nine different teams, like, all those revenue streams should be kept separate so that each team, if they are profitable, can invest in their own team at that point, not in some other team.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, and for me, it's like, you get what you pay for, in that we've allowed, like, as a consumer base, and then for our government to allow, like, it should not be a conversation of competing with the big guys and being bought out by the big guys. You should not allow them to buy out all of these companies. They should not have been allowed to buy out Shaw and MTS and Kudo and Fido and all of the others, because this is what it was inevitably going to. They were just expanding and expanding and expanding to a point where the Toronto sports landscape is owned by Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. The only team right now that isn't is the Toronto Scepters and the Toronto WNBA franchise.
But I mean, you can't put the cat back in the bag now, though, right? Like, that's the problem, is that it's out and it's got its claws out and it's looking for more.
I mean, unless the federal and provincial governments start, you know, hiking up their pants and saying, okay, we're going to start breaking these things up and start treating you like monopolies and breaking these companies apart, you can't put the cat back in the bag.
No, and that's
it's incumbent on powers higher than the consumers to make those decisions.
But that's the thing, though, is that nobody's going to touch that, because, again, I hate to say it, corporate matters rules government as well at some point.
I'm watching my investment portfolio today tick up and up and up and up, based on the news coming out about the Rogers acquisition of MLSE, right? Like, I'm feeling the positive benefits of this, but even I'm like, all right, this is not a good thing.
Yeah, no, I don't like it at all. So we'll have to see what happens there, but hopefully we'll figure something out on that coming up. I mean, if possible, folks, don't buy tickets to Rogers stuff. Don't change your, I'm not saying you have to change your cell phone provider, but that'd be helpful too. In saying that, though, we're just about out of time here. I do want to announce we're going to try and get him on either next week or the week after. We're doing some negotiation right now, but I finally got a hold of, and certainly I'm going to try and bring him in, a former professional hockey player who has now set up shop here in Winnipeg.
Okay.
Set up shop as a head coach of an MJHL team, to give you a little bit more on that. We're going to see if we can talk to this gentleman coming up in a few weeks, and at the very most, and hopefully next week if he's available. But we'll see how everything goes, see if Jason and I have recovered from our respective illnesses enough to make sure he doesn't get sick. But at the end of the day, though, I think this will be a really good chat with this guy. He's very excited about the prospects he has in terms of some of the players he has in the MJHL, and certainly very excited about his own opportunity of getting to be a head coach for the very first time as well. So I think it's going to be fun to talk to him. We'll certainly keep you in touch as to who that is. So lots going on that way. Jason, anything you want to say before we get out of here for another week?
Everybody, it is back to school and back to everything, back to daycare. So don't be like us. Don't get sick.
Yeah.
Would not recommend. Not a fun time.
No, I'm going to echo that sentiment. I know there's been a couple of, I was kind of saying to Jason before the show that had sent some softball playoffs this weekend, and there were kids and parents that were coming out. Ah, my kids already got sick first week back and already sick here. I'm going, you guys are nothing but rabid carriers of diseases. Get out of here.
So, stay away from me, you infectious.
And sure enough, I got sick. So there you go, in terms of my illness. So we should be good, though. We should be back in studio next week. We'll make sure everything happens that way. Obviously, we'll keep an eye on that. But thanks for tuning in here on The Hockey Show. Again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in on this Thursday. We'll see everybody next week here on 101.5 UMFM.
The Bill, you understand the situation here.
All right, chill out your day.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 megahertz on the FM dial from Winnipeg.
And that is how you do that.
Amazing.
That was kind of impressive.